Great to have you with us here on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here, taking a look at education today and college, starting out by talking with our guest, Bassam Shakashiri. Bassam is starting his 50th year of teaching at the UW-Madison. He'll be starting that in a couple of weeks, as a matter of fact. It's great to have him with us. That's a long time. College and college students probably changed quite a bit over 50 years. Anyway, we'll find out what he thinks as we talk with him, and certainly looking forward to hearing from you as well. I hope you'll join in with your own thoughts about college and education and how it may have changed over time. Give us a call, 1-800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org. And Bassam Shakashiri, congratulations on starting your 50th year of teaching.
It's delightful to be with you, Larry, on this occasion. Yes, I am starting my 50th year as a faculty member here. I'm very proud of that. I'm very proud of being a UW-Madison faculty member. A lot has happened in the past 49 years.
In your mind, what have been the bigger changes?
Oh, lots of changes. One of the most notable changes to me is the increase in population. You know, when I came to Madison, the population was about 173,000. Today, it's 258,000. That's almost a 50% increase. Middleton, which is right next to Madison, back then the population was about 8,000. Now it is 19,000. Dane County, a huge increase in Dane County, from 290,000 to 542,000. The United States has gone from 203 million to 329 million. And then, Larry, the world's population has gone from 3.7 billion to 7.6 billion. So population growth is one of the great challenges that we face in society and in science. It's a daunting challenge. The consequences are very serious. It's among the grand challenges that we face. So that's one change. And then UW-Madison has changed quite a bit.
Yeah.
Not only physically in the physical structure in the city, but also in the profile of the faculty, the profile of the students. And to me, it's very important that we recommit ourselves to the Wisconsin idea. And be very careful in inventing the Wisconsin idea for the 21st century. We're very proud of what the Wisconsin idea has done to not only to the university, to the state, to the nation, to the world, whether it's vitamin D or warfarin or satellites, you name it, Babcock ice cream. But we have to be thinking about those grand challenges that we face and how the solutions to those challenges are related to science, to technology, and to being ethical and acting in responsible ways to have science not only be advanced by the researchers that we have, but also to have science serve society. The connection between science and society is very, very important. And one big change is the tremendous increase in awareness about climate, about global warming, about climate change. This is the single most important challenge that humanity has ever faced, and the consequences can be catastrophic if we don't try to mitigate the changes that are occurring in the climate, primarily because of the huge success of the Industrial Revolution, because we depend so heavily on fossil fuels. And I'm proud to say that scientists, technologists are doing research to find reliable, economical, alternative uses of energy. I think that's tremendous. But we need to get everyone in society to care about the quality of life and to care about using these new advances in science and technology to help us enjoy what we do, whether you like to go fishing or you like to go hunting, you like the outdoors, you like to grow a garden. All of these factors are very, very much related to global warming and the effect of the increasing amount of carbon dioxide gas that we humans are putting into the environment. There are very serious ramifications to this. You know, Larry, I'm not a gloom and doom person. You know that. I'm an incurable optimist, but I'm also a realist. And that's why through education at the college level, at the pre-college level, at the graduate level, we must be paying close attention to the daunting challenge of global warming. It is something that we would be amiss in our responsibilities as citizens, as parents, as grandparents. We would be amiss if we don't try to mitigate and try to improve the way in which we enjoy life, but not depend so much on fossil fuels.
It's just kind of interesting. You sent us hardiness zone maps from 1990 and then comparing it to 2012, the hardiness zones. And we have that up, by the way, on ideas@wpr.org. You can take a look at, as you're listening to the show, you can take a look at the difference in the hardiness zones, which is one way, you know, science has allowed us to be able to identify those zones pretty carefully, and there are huge changes.
If you look at these maps, they clearly show anyone in middle school or even lower looks at the color code of these maps, you can see that global warming is real. It's one of the important telltales about the effect of global warming. You know, another one for us in the Madison area here is the duration of ice on the surface of Lake Mendota.
Mm-hmm.
It is unequivocal that the duration of ice on the surface of a lake is getting shorter and shorter and shorter. And that is another telltale of global warming. So the evidence is there. The real question is, what do we do about this? We can make a note of it. We can say, well, you know, not much I can do about it. There's lots we can do about it. We can take personal action. We can take action as a community. We can take action by urging our elected officials at the local, state, and the federal level to enact regulations and to and pass legislation that will be enforced in support of mitigating climate change. I think this is a very important responsibility that we have, and I am very proud to have been a faculty member at UW-Madison for 49 years and be given the opportunity to come on the air and talk about these issues. It is part of my responsibility. It's part of the responsibility of all of my colleagues to advance research, to advance science, and to serve society. And that's my call for everyone in the listening audience. You have a wonderful listening audience, Larry. Mm-hmm. Every place I go, people ask me, when are you going to be on Larry's show again? And you do a lot of science programs, a variety of programs. So thank you for doing that, Larry.
When it comes to education and in the sciences, and thinking back the 49 years, are we doing things differently than we did in terms of science education then and now?
We're trying to learn how to be effectively using technology to help in education. So there were no iPhones back then. Any computers on the small scale that we have them now. So technology has changed quite a bit. The technology changes in batteries has changed quite a bit. So how do we adapt ourselves to these changes and put them to good use? You know, changes, advances in technology, Larry, can be put to good use, and sometimes they can be put to bad use. It's part of our moral fabric to be responsible in how we use these advances. And we rely quite a bit now on information, on sharing information. I favor a mode of instruction which is personal. I'm a big fan of the effective use of technology, but not at the expense of having personal interactions. Those are most valuable interactions in the classroom and outside the classroom.
Yeah.
And that's why my Sciences Fund group is heavily engaged in making visits and stops all over the state and outside the state. You know, this coming weekend, we're going to be at the Middleton Good Neighbor Festival.
You are?
Yes, we are. And it's an event that starts Friday evening, goes on all day Saturday, and then on Sunday there's a parade in Middleton. A week from Saturday, we will be at the West Side Community Market. We've been to libraries. We've been to schools in the past several months, and we have rather a full schedule in going to different locations in the state. And outside the state, we took the Sciences Fund truck to a high school conference in Naperville, Illinois, where there were over 600 high school science teachers from all over the United States and Canada. They were actually chemistry teachers. So we participated in the Wisconsin Society of Science Teachers programs. Upcoming in November at Monona Terrace, an all-day event sponsored by the Wisconsin Academy on Climate Change. These are some of the changes that I am very proud to be sharing with you, and I'm very proud to be part of, because it is our awesome responsibility to advance science and to have the benefits that accrue to us from science. And we have to be careful about the consequences of these advances.
Talking today with Bassam Shakashiri, professor of chemistry at UW-Madison, as we visit with him about his coming up on 50 years of teaching and service to the UW, to the state of Wisconsin and to UW-Madison. Join in with your own questions or comments at 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org. What do you think is the most significant advancement in science in the last 50 years? A question about science. Give us a call or shoot us an email. I'm Larry Mueller. Dave Potratz, our engineer today, Jill Nadeau, our producer, and you are listening to the Ideas Network. Talking science and science education today with our guest, Bassam Shakashiri, professor of chemistry at UW-Madison. Great to have him along. Join in with your own comments or questions at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org. Steve emailed. He's wondering about your thoughts, opinions on population and climate change. Are you confident that changes in behavior will be enough to counter the inflated population, human population? He says, consider you can only have so many fish in a given size tank before the environment cannot sustain it. Does that apply to Earth in general?
Yes, I'm confident that we must act, and we have to be careful in what we choose to act upon. So reducing our dependence on fossil fuels as a source of energy is something that will help a great deal. Mitigating climate change, even though as the population of the world is increasing, it won't be too far before it will be 8 billion people. We have to be thinking about the consequences of hot weather in areas where there isn't enough food, where water is an important, a very crucial component to life as we know it. Human life, animal life, plant life. Yes, I'm confident that action by us as a responsible human being, action that is debated, discussed, agreed upon, people have different opinions about what should be done, but lack of action is unacceptable. So I'm confident that action that we agree on can help mitigate. population control, population change. That's one of the difficult questions that we face in science and in society. There are issues that relate to personal and community beliefs. Sometimes people say they clash with scientific findings. I'm one who says they don't clash. I'm one who says they should be looked at carefully. They should be examined and should be discussed and debated respectfully. Larry, the element of respect in many of our conversations in person and also on the media is lacking. That's very troublesome to me. I'm confident if we engage in respectful conversations, respectful discourse, we can mitigate, we can reduce changes that that face us as human beings, as inhabitants of this planet. Yes, I'm confident of that, Steve, and thank you for your email with this question.
George in Mindoro has something for you there. Let's go to George. Hi, thank you for calling.
Well, good morning, sir. Thanks for your service to the state. 50 years is a really excellent. I spent my first 50 years also in the agriculture industry, serving our dairy industry in Wisconsin. So you and I must be about the same age. And I'm kind of curious what you've actually seen in climate change over your time. I kind of have my feelings on what I've seen. We must be about the same age, 80. That's just curious.
All right.
The climate changes that you and I and others have experienced are out there. We have more extreme weather now than we did before. We have more devastating weather events than we've had before. In different parts of the world, there is more famine because they don't have enough food. They don't have enough water to live. The scientific evidence that has been mounting, and it's unambiguous, it's unequivocal, is that the carbon dioxide amounts that we put into the atmosphere as the result of our reliance on fossil fuels continues to increase. There's a very famous and well-known display called the Keeling Curve. It's named after the scientist Keeling, K-E-E-L-I-N-G. It's a measurement of the amount of carbon dioxide on the top of one of the observatories in Hawaii. And the carbon dioxide concentrations has changed considerably in the past 50 years. Actually, it's been changing for many, many years since the Industrial Revolution. That's the time marker we think about. The Industrial Revolution has benefited society a great deal. All the advances that we enjoy in healthcare, transportation, communication, you name it, and education is a consequence of the Industrial Revolution. But there are also adverse effects, and that is the over-reliance on fossil fuels as a source of energy. Now, I've also seen in the past 50 years tremendous increase in research programs and research results attempting to develop alternative sources of energy, whether it's electrical, wind, solar. I work in the Farrington Daniels Chemistry Building. Farrington Daniels was a chemist. He was chair of the chemistry department, and he was one of the early pioneers that examined solar energy as an alternative resource for it. I don't know. Does that help with your question, George?
I think
it helps a little bit, you bet.
Thank you very much for calling. Jason in Neosho has, I think, something that goes right along with what you were just talking about. Jason, hi.
Hello, sir. I love your show. I was listening to the doctor talk, and I'm 48, and I've seen a few winters, and I notice they're changing. And, watching TV, you see what's happening with the Inuits how winters are changing. You know, we're not having the winters like we used to. I guess I have a twofold question. One is, what is an indisputable fact that says man is causing it? And my second question, which goes along with the first, is if every person on the planet were to jump on a ship and leave for 100 years, if we came back, would the temperatures be what they were 50 years ago, 100 years ago? I don't understand how it can be completely blamed on humans. Is it a cycle that we're going through? Because we know that there's cycles through the glacial borings that we do. I guess that's my question.
All right. Thank you for calling.
Excellent observation, Jason. Thank you for your call. Yes, there are cycles. There are natural causes for climate change. There's no denial of that. But there is a very direct correlation between the amount of carbon dioxide that we are putting into the environment and the changes in temperature. These pieces of information are the results of scientific studies that show that the amount of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere as back as 800,000 years ago is directly correlated with the changes in temperatures. So this is an excellent example of how science advances can serve society by giving us information, by learning how to use this information to act. So it is true that there are natural causes to climate change, but they are small compared to what has happened and continues.
Since the Industrial Revolution.
And continues to happen since the Industrial Revolution.
Yeah.
And Jason, you and others, I invite you to visit my website. I have displays and information about such concepts that I'm sharing with you here. If you just go to scifun.org, scifun.org, on the front page, you will see an entry that says Science and Society. If you click there, you can gain some additional knowledge about what I'm sharing with you. On the left-hand side of that front page, there is an entry that says Climate Science. There's more details about the changes that have been occurring in the global warming changes as we know from scientific investigations. So, you know, the thoroughness of these investigations, the dedication of scientists, not only at UW-Madison and around the world, to address these daunting global challenges is really remarkable.
And thank you very much again for calling, Jason. Appreciate it. Kurt in Appleton has something for us. Hi, Kurt.
Yeah, hi, Larry and Professor. Congratulations on an ongoing amazing career. It's pretty awesome.
Thank you.
I'm out in the backyard panning here, and one thing I wondered as I listened to your program was, is there any good research going on now? I'm kind of a fan of many approach treatment to this problem. And what about conservation of resources? In other words, turning down the heat, turning off the lights, as we get more efficient in our heating and lighting, I see our younger generation just all viewing the technology as the answer. But is there any research as to when you have 7 billion people, if they all turn down the thermostat 1 degree or turn off the lights more, how much of an impact would that have?
All of that, Kurt, adds up. What you have just ticked off are examples of the personal responsibility that we can each have and must exercise, not only on a personal basis, but, you know, with our neighbors, in our community. And we must, as citizens of Wisconsin, as citizens of the United States, as citizens of the world, be aware of how important it is for each one of us, especially in the United States, because we contribute more to the emission of carbon dioxide than anywhere else in the world. We contribute much more because of the great advances in technology that we enjoy. And so conservation is key to what must be done. And by examining our own personal behavior, our own interactions with the immediate environment that we are in, I think that would be an excellent set of steps that we must pursue.
And as I was thinking about the changes in business, you know, there have been, despite maybe the slowing down of some potential changes in energy conservation and so forth, businesses have taken upon themselves, just as a matter of good sense, good economic sense, I should say, to have looked at ways and are implementing ways that they, too, save energy and so forth.
We have to look at this from the economic point of view, from the cost-benefits analysis. We have to examine carefully a good alternative ways by which we will continue to enjoy the high standards of living that we have. There's no question about that. It's a matter of looking carefully at the resources available to us and also taking responsible action for that. And there, this to me is an awesome responsibility that individually and collectively we must all have.
Bassam Shakashiri, our guest. Questions or comments for him, I hope you'll join in. He's starting his 50th year of teaching at UW-Madison in the Department of Chemistry. He's been a professor of chemistry 49 years, teaching anyway, and he's on his 50th in about 2 weeks. He starts that off. So you can join in, too, at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org. Orville wondered if there are any solutions being worked on to address plastic waste. I just saw a 60 Minutes program the other night that was kind of addressing that. It was scary to look at the problems in that area.
Yes, I saw parts of that program, and it can be scary, but Larry, we should think carefully about what action we must take. Being scared sometimes is a way to get us to pay attention. But the plastics industry cares a lot about recycling and about disposal. So there are different approaches that are being developed and pursued for recycling plastics and for maybe even using less plastic straws, for example. Mm-hmm. We see these horrible pictures on television and in the print media and on the internet of big globs of plastic floating in the ocean. That's part of the collective responsibility that we should all exercise and insist that we as responsible citizens cannot tolerate being so irresponsible in the disposal of these products that we use. And industry cares about this. Industry for economic reasons, reasons that relate to being in good business, they care about these things. And you know, the consumers can express themselves, industry responds. I think that's a very important part of the action that we take.
Let's go to Catherine in Superior next. Hi, Catherine.
Hi, how are you?
Great, appreciate your call. What's on your mind?
Hey, thank you. This is Catherine, and I'm the Director for Continuing Education at the University of Wisconsin-Superior. And I just want to thank you for helping me with my final stretch to UW La Crosse, where I'm going to be meeting with other directors. And so what's on my mind is lifelong learning. And so first to the doctor, what do you do to keep yourself engaged in learning? And then what suggestions might you have for me and what I could be doing with our community to keep them engaged in learning?
Yeah.
What do we do to keep learning? We pay attention. We converse. We visit. We take questions on the call, on the radio from callers that cause us to think more about how we can sharpen the focus of what we're working on, what we're trying to learn. We read books. We converse. We don't isolate ourselves electronically or otherwise. We engage in meaningful discourse with others about matters that are important to us. Does that help, Catherine?
That does help. Yep, thank you. And I'm just curious, what do you think we could do? What kind of programming might we offer to keep community engaged, our adult learners, and just to be a lifelong learner?
Yeah. So at the community level.
Community level.
Now, here's the Catherine who's...
Support your library by going to the library, by reading books. Insist on having family members do things together without having to look every 5 minutes at their electronic device. Enjoy the outdoors.
But how do you get people to do that, I think, is she is in a position where she's got to get community. She's promoting lifelong learning in her community. And how does she get others to go along with her? I mean, you do it all the time with the, for example, with your truck.
Larry, yeah, you know, the I say science is fun, right? I mean, Larry, fun doesn't change the world. Action is what changes the world.
Yeah.
So we have to be joyful in what we do. We have to learn how to struggle and conquer obstacles and barriers and deal with conflicts. And this happens through personal discourse. It's very, very important to me that people continue to visit with each other, talk with each other, disagree with each other, watch the sports events with each other. Well, some sports events. I am not very happy about watching violent sports events. Deadly violence is one of the grand challenges that we have in society. So, yes, Catherine, I think locally you can invite people to have conversations about topics that they care about and help them and have them help you decide what these topics are. It's a mutual, respectful sort of interaction that should happen. So, you know, science is fun is a philosophy, Larry. You know that. Mm-hmm. It's important that we act on what we learn. We have these different experiences by ourselves, but we should be sharing. We should be conversing. We should engage in respectful disagreements. Stay away from violence.
We have other callers. Thank you so much, Catherine, for calling. Appreciate your call. Karen in Cumberland, it's your turn. Hi, thank you.
Hi.
Thanks for calling.
Thank you for taking my call. I appreciate you taking my call. My question is about land and water and environmental management. As we see, you know, people who are very affluent fleeing the coast to get away from climate change, how do we now start preparing our small rural communities the best way possible to try and protect our lands in rural areas and small communities from people who might have a far more wasteful approach?
Once again, Karen, I would say community conversation, people talking about the quality of water in the lake, the joy that comes from fishing in the lake, swimming in the lake, looking at how the different agricultural products that are around the lake are being affected by climate change, and what we can do about them. We are citizens in Wisconsin, we are citizens in the United States. We have a say about the quality of life in the environment that we enjoy. And I think learning about the consequences of maybe adding too much fertilizer, maybe the wrong kind of fertilizer, the effect on fertilizers on the eutrophication of water bodies. You know, Lake Mendota is one of the most studied lakes in the world. So we should learn what the research has tells us about the consequences of these different societal changes that are causing the lakes to change. Karen, there are in the United States about 1.2 million people who cannot drink clean water. Around the globe, it's about 1.3 billion people who cannot drink clean water. So these are matters that require us at the local level to understand what the effect continues to be of our advances in society and about mining and about everything else that happened, you know, agricultural products that are used on farms. All of these are the topics to be looked at and discussed locally and be informed by the results of scientific and technological research that's available to everybody.
And Karen, I would just add, the University of Wisconsin Department of Community and Environmental Sociology has done a lot of research on the effects of increasing populations, in particular in rural areas. And you might go to their website, if you Community and Environmental Sociology at UW-Madison, and there's some, you know, scientific research that's gone on to look into just that. So I would invite you to do that. And Bassam, what are you going to be focusing your energy on in the next few years?
More of the same. I want to get better at it. I want to listen to more people in my immediate community, people on the radio, to what concerns they have. I want to work with people to be effective in continuing to advance the quality of life in our in our immediate environment. And, you know, 50 years, you know, the state is 172 years old. And 50 years, that's a good chunk of it, right? So that's I am very grateful to have the opportunity of being at UW-Madison. I'm thankful to you, Larry, for inviting me. I think we've been doing this for, I don't know, 25, 30 years now.
Yeah.
So that's a good chunk of the 50 years here. And so that's what's on my agenda.
But Sam, it's always a pleasure. Your website address, again, just because people may not have gotten it, there's so much good information on that website about everything from climate change to fun science projects that you can do. What's that website again?
It's scifun.org, scifun.org. We welcome your visiting our website. Yes, there is a lot of information there, and there is room also for you to make comments and ask questions. We try to respond to questions fairly quickly. We answer all kinds of questions except from students. We don't help them do their homework problems.
On that note, thanks again, Bassam. We'll look forward to your next visit. Appreciate it very much. Bassam Shakashiri, professor of chemistry at the UW-Madison, is known for his leadership in national science policy and promoting excellence in science education at all levels, and for his development and use of demonstrations in teaching chemistry. That chemistry truck has really, really done a lot, and it's and his Christmas program, his holiday Christmas program, very popular event every year, and he'll be doing it again this year for sure. Well, I've got a kind of a scary statistic for you. 10 students, take a look at 10 students starting college, 4 out of 10 end up dropping out. That's a terrible, terrible waste, a terrible situation that we found ourselves in as a country. And David Kirp has written a new book called The College Dropout Scandal. He talks about the dropout rates, and he'll talk with us about why or what we can do to turn it around, because there are things that we can do to do that. And that'll be next. I'm Larry Mueller. You are listening to the Ideas Network.